All right, and welcome everybody. It's been a while since I brought everyone in with a Rammstein, so welcome to Wednesday night's Cancel the Cabal. I'm Stephen Roberts. I have my very best co-host that I've ever had on, Jillian Trebilcock. How are you, Jill? Say hi.
I'm very well. Thank you, Stephen, my best producer that I've ever had.
Oh, we got a fun show tonight.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, my guest said he's sipping down 180 alcohol, corn whiskey maybe, or something like that. I'm not sure, but he said this should be a blast, and everybody was watching him kind of bob his head to the bumper music. But
that seems to be a prerequisite to be on our shows, doesn't it? Everybody has to be drinking on the other end.
Yes,
absolutely. You know, whenever I love coming in and discussing topics right after listening to German hardcore music. So
I do too. But absolutely, my guest tonight is Carlos Morales of TruthOverComfort.net, and Carlos is a former CPS. Worker, and he's a whistleblower. Carlos has come out against, I believe it's South Carolina. Is that right, Carlos?
Okay, so I actually worked in San Antonio, Texas.
San Antonio, Texas.
And okay. Now I live in Asheville, North Carolina. North Carolina. I work with a group here called the Blue Ridge Liberty Project, which is a peaceful parenting voluntarist organization that is working to promote kind of the non-aggression principle applied throughout people's lives and working, and obviously, and if you promote the non-aggression principle, that is antithetical to statism in every single possible way.
But welcome to the show, Carlos Morales.
So I'm glad you called me in here, Stephen. I worked for the agency for a little over a year. And what I found after working for the agency was to act morally within it would be antithetical to the motives and interests of the agency as it stands right now, and as it's kind of stand from the beginning of time as far as state entities are concerned. I'm sure your audience is well aware, you know, the vast majority of state bureaucracies as we know them right now are pretty evil to the core, especially based on the incentive structures, which of course, you know, one from the revenue services, which is the only way they get it through taxation, but also just kind of their motives behind those agencies.
When you're saying their motives behind those agencies, do you want to extrapolate on that a little bit?
Sure. You know, there's this thing where we usually whenever people are talking about morality, they're always talking about intent. They're never actually talking about action. And to me, intent means very, very little whenever you have blood on your hands. Whomever you kill doesn't care if you kill them for freedom or if you kill them for a paycheck. Either way, it's quite a bad situation for them. So supposedly Child Protective Services' intent is to protect children. But what it really has done is collect revenue from kidnapping children. It has collected revenue by promoting the war on drugs rather than the war on child abuse. So there's definitely a motive there in order to hamper freedom across the United States by causing individuals to live in fear, especially activists. I'm actually the only former investigator that ever come out against the agency who wasn't anonymous. If that's not the case, I would love to know whomever it was, but Child Protective Services has done a lot of terrible things I would like to get into here.
Yeah, well, that's really interesting because you say that you were an investigator, because a lot of people can make these claims, right? Which I'm not, but you actually can back up these claims. The claims being, you know, that they're doing it to, you know, that there's an ethical dilemma, there's a conflict between, you know, because you get more money for looking after the children, particularly if you drug them and particularly if they say they have a disability. So they over-pathologize the children. But you're saying about when you – let's get back to the initial claim, which is that they steal children or, you know,
well,
get to
it's
that
all about
one
the money,
and
right,
the evidence
Carlos?
On that.
Okay, so let's think about first, whenever you look at any kind of agency, what you want to look at is the incentive structure of that agency, right? So if they have an incentive to do good or provide a – so a company, for instance, has an incentive, a normal company, not say a corporation. A company actually has to produce something, right, in order to gain revenue. Now, of course, Child Protective Services, just like every other government agency, gains its revenue through the use of force. But it gets worse than that. Since the 70s, essentially, the federal government has actually given money to the state to kind of match whatever they're making as far as how much money is going to the Child Protective Services. Now, Child Protective Services is given more money for every single allegation that is proven true, right? Because that means that there's a lot of abuse going on. So does that mean that every single case then is going to be ethically run, that the Child Protective Services is not going to go based on that incentive to allege false abuse as being supposedly true? Of course not. And they've done it time and time again. Now, what really what really bothers me here is, so alleged abuse. Let's bring up for instance the fact that over 85% of all removals of children being removed from homes are not for physical or sexual abuse. They're for negligence. Now, that's according to childwelfare.gov. But negligence, what people don't seem to realize, can actually mean that you smoked marijuana outside of your house 3 years ago. That can be considered emotional negligence to a child, and a child can be removed based off of that supposition. Not only that, an accusation is considered evidence. So you already have that issue as far as that's concerned. So the vast majority of cases that I was dealing with were for things with very, very little amount of evidence that we could get removals for. And the biggest one, of course, was marijuana use.
That's phenomenal.
I've been told by another CPS whistleblower, Carlos, that money is the biggest part of that there is absolutely no incentive for any CPS worker to get a child back to its parents or parent just because of the money.
No financial incentive.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. So, you know, there's this thought, I guess, by some people who are against Child Protective Services, and this is fair because it can be confused sometimes, that if I'm an investigator and I go out and I grab this kid and I throw him into a foster home, that then someone just miraculously puts money in my pocket. It's not as simple as that. Bureaucracies love to remove any sense of responsibility for any actions, especially immoral actions, so you can always blame it on someone else. So instead, I work for an entire year. Whenever I get a removal, according to my supervisors, I'm kind of a hero because I'm going out there and I'm fighting the good fight in order to prevent child abuse, right? So the agency looks positively towards those who are removing the most amount of kids, which means at the end of the year, whenever a raise is due, basically there's levels of investigators. You can be 1, 2, 3, 4, whatnot. In order to get there, you have to be performing a certain amount of removals per year. So it's never as simple as they just put that money in your pocket. But then again, in order to really move up in the agency, you have to be proving that a certain amount of allegations are true per year, whether or not those actually occurred.
Right. It's funny, but the one thing that I want to ask is, what does it feel like when you remove a kid? Because you obviously were in touch with your heart during this. So what did that feel like? Like, you caused some angst for you, which I actually got trained as a in rural social welfare at one point in my life, and I said, there's no way I can go in and work. They wanted to put me on placement at Child and Family Services in Australia. It's Child Protective Services. I thought, I don't want this responsibility of taking a kid from its drunk parents or whatever, you know. And so I refused to take a placement there and took it in community development. But what does it feel like? Like, once you've done it, what do you go through after you've removed a child from their family?
So let me tell you basically about my first 24 hours of Child Protective Services investigator, and this will kind of give you a clue.
Sure.
As a CPS investigator, this, of course, after, like, you know, the little, oh, well, this is what it's like to be an investigator, but before any real training was concerned, right? Essentially, as soon as you start up, you partner up with another investigator and you go out and you go fight people or whatever. You know, that's essentially what you're actually doing. So we heard about this drug bust that was going on. The DEA went into this place, broke into their house, you know, raided the whole place and found drugs and the like. So we, I believe it was cocaine, a little bit of marijuana, and I think, if I recall correctly, there's pharmaceutical drugs. Mm-hmm. So We get into the house, right? Me and this investigator, and we could hear some people crying in the background. It was the mom whose kids were there, and the kids were crying too. So we walk through the house, and I see all this broken glass and things like that, right? Beer bottles, things like that. And I'm smelling this horrific smell, and I have no idea what it is until I walk around the corner and I look into a room, and there is fecal matter all over the floor. It's actually kids' fecal matter. And what they were having the kids do was crap where all the drugs were so that people wouldn't go in there in order to steal the drugs.
Or smell them, yeah.
Or smell them, yeah. So I walked out of the house, and I saw the mom crying. She was yelling everything else. And the investigator was very, very unempathetic towards the parent, which I could kind of understand. Like, hey, you stuck your kids in this situation. This is obviously terrible. And there was a bunch of other people crying. And some relatives came by. And they said, hey, we can take the kid in. You know, why don't you place him with us? Because I've heard in foster homes, kids are getting abused. And yeah. In my mind, I was like, oh, these guys are just pigs. They're liars. Foster homes are great. Like I was still living under this delusion. Yeah, so right. we ended up getting the kids out of there. And then we threw them in foster home, right? The truth of the matter was, though, is that we didn't do very much to actually help these kids. And that first case, that was the only removal I've ever had where I at least felt at a gut level that it was right at the time. So other cases where I had removals, which weren't many, actually, I was quite good about placing children into another parent's house or like a relative's house, which most other investigators did not do. But I felt quite guilty about just throwing them in a foster home. But a lot of these other cases, I mean, I felt like crap. And I was convincing myself in every crap case that I had that at some point we were going to finally do something good, you know? But it was case after case where all we were doing was promoting, you know, the war on drugs, where we were removing kids from homes because someone was using marijuana or there was a false allegation of domestic violence. And it wasn't until my last case in which it involved the death of a mother in a particular case, which I can't go into too much detail in regards to that, that I turned in my resignation and I was done. I felt horrific, horrible the entire time I was working for the agency. And I haven't felt right since, which is why I've come out on the record as far as this is concerned and come out against the agency, because it's guilt. It is a form of post-traumatic stress disorder that you end up going through if you have any conscience whatsoever after leaving an agency like that.
Sure, absolutely it is. Good people do have guilt. They do have feelings, and psychopathic and narcissistic people don't seem to. They seem to sleep like babies when they're robbing and pillaging and rob and rape and pillage. That's their.
Well, one of the best things you can do if you want to start a cult is to create an atmosphere of us versus them.
Sure.
Where you are essentially told all the time that these other people are evil and you're the good ones, right? So they do this with cops all the time. They basically tell cops every single time you pull someone over, there's a very good chance you're going to get shot. It's not true. They're safer than, you know, crab fishermen. But essentially they're taught this. So they have this kind of personality that starts doing this us versus them. So with investigators, even when they screw up in a case and a kid ends up dead, or they throw a kid in the foster home where he ends up getting molested, every single time they just lay the blame on someone else.
Sure.
So they can always splinter it off.
That's right.
And then after a while, you know, even if you feel terrible about this organization, well, now I'm making $60,000 a year. I got two kids. I got health care. What am I going to do?
Yeah.
You know, never mind, you know, fucking ethics.
Yeah, you're
but no, it's all this kind of there's rationalizations in every single one of these cases.
Yep.
And I would like to say that at some point I met some like nice, great person. We were really able to talk it out. But the truth of the matter was that never happened.
Exactly. Yeah. It's the same argument with police. You know, they absolutely think that they're doing good, but eventually they find out where the real crime and real corruption is, and it's at City Hall and their local state houses and the federal Congress and Senate. And then it's like, what do you do? Yeah, I'm making 50 G a year, and I got to turn my head this way because my boss says so, you know?
Yeah, it's just always funny with these agencies. When it comes to the government, no matter how much they mess up and no matter how much they get money they get, they always go, well, we just need more money. We just need more money. Like public schools, for instance, right now, You know, they're getting paid. Public schools right now, for instance, in Keene, New Hampshire, because I was just looking this up, it's $19,000 per kid in public school right now, which is an insane amount of money. You know, they're not even getting free food. So it's just a crazy amount of money, but they keep on alleging the fact that, oh, well, we just need more money. But if you take a look, and Cato Institute did this thing, where they're showing the increase in exponential increase in the amount of money that public schools are bringing in now, it's been directly correlated with a lowering of the literacy rate. Now, if you were running a company and you were sticking, you know, millions and millions and millions of dollars into something and you kept on getting worse results, well, you know, someone would fire you or someone would bring it up. You wouldn't be able to just say, hey, give me more money now.
Yeah, let's just keep going forward as the 2012 Democratic slogan was. keep going forward.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, my God. That was so hilarious. That was like a movie. Well, it was just like, well, your first thing was hope, which we all know the biggest lie is political hope. It's just geared and it's like a drug to people's minds. It's like hope. But then when he comes out in 2012, he's like, move forward. Don't pay attention to what I did in the past.
Yes.
So it was Idiocracy, like completely. It was so succinct.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. Yeah, we've been talking about that movie actually, and things are moving towards that way with the education system. But Jill, I thought you might have had something there a minute ago. You turned your mic on and then clicked it off.
Yeah, well, I want to bring Danny in, but just before I do, it might even segue over.
Danny's just a listener.
Ah. Hi, Danny, the listener.
The one.
Go ahead. what I'm interested in exploring with you is your opinions and ideas about paternalism and how we actually don't have our own power. Instead, we always resort to the courts as the paternal sort of solution to our problems. And go on. I know you've got lots to say.
Well, the state does this wonderful thing of removing the locus of control from the individual and all sense of self-responsibility and moves that over to the state, right? And they do it from a really young age. Like paternalism starts, you know, basically from the time you're born when you have to sign off birth certificate and they're looking at your baby to make sure you know what you're doing till the point that, of course, where they're five, when they're thrusted in the 15,000 years of a public education, where they're taught, of course, a very skewed view of history. But not only that the soldiers and policemen and all those other people are there to protect you. So when you get out of this indoctrination circus, you know, by the time you're 18 years old, if you see something bad happening around you, you immediately think, oh, well, I have to call these external authorities in order to take care of this because if I do it, well, that'll end up bad. There's no sense of individual responsibility whatsoever. So I actually started working for the agency after I had witnessed child abuse occurring in real life. Like I'd seen some people hitting their kids. I stepped in on it and ended up getting assaulted for it by these parents. And, you know, I was kind of told, oh, well, you're supposed to call Child Protective Services if you want to, you know, do anything with your life. So I decided to turn in my application and join the agency because I believed at the time that it was the only way to really get in the trenches there and try to prevent child abuse. And of course, I was shown time and time again that is not what we're there for. And what made it even worse, of course, was the fact that everybody had been convinced that there was an agency out there that was really advocating for children and that their tax dollars were going to something better than a kidnapping ring.
Well, you see, what the big problem is, Carlos, is many movies and television shows that actually show these situations, they show it in a false light. They show the CPS worker as the good guy, like you say. And
you're telling me that the people on the TV are lying? This is crazy. This is such news
to
me.
I wouldn't
say
that.
Law and Order isn't real?
Law and Order,
they're always right?
Exactly, yeah.
It's just those damn rights. You know, it's always funny in Law and Order. Like, the only time they'll get screwed over is if someone says, oh, well, I have rights. And like, oh, damn, those constitutional rights.
Yeah, those constitutional
And they're kind of like giving rights, this message that it's rights that are bad.
Yes, exactly.
If only we allowed the fascist state to overthrow humanity.
Yeah, you don't mind the caller there, Danny, contributing a little bit, do you?
Oh, go right ahead.
Yeah, Danny, he said he was a CPS worker for 18 months himself.
Really?
Yes. Danny,
tell us about it.
How's the feedback?
You're okay.
Feedback okay? It's not reverbing?
No, you sound good, Danny.
Everything's fine.
Awesome. Pleasure. Yeah, CPS, Riverside County. I had five CPS
in California
placed with me at one time.
In Riverside, California?
Back in May of 2012.
Yeah. Is that Riverside, California?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so I had five kids with me. They all came almost on the same day. It was amazing. And we were holding them all together here for 4 months. And then one CPS worker tried to say that there was bruising, abnormal bruising, called in an investigator. This was during a visit in the Riverside County office. And the investigator said, these are normal bruising. She didn't have nothing to hold the kids for. What she do, she makes up a communication statement that she claims to have made to me. Holds the kids. After a week, it was unfounded after the investigation. And then once it was unfounded, she still didn't want to give the kid back. So I went to her supervisor, don't want to give the kid back. Went to her assistant regional manager. She says, can you meet us halfway? So she releases the two children back to me. So I'm back with five. On the 11th, that was June 28th, and then you have July 11th, 2012. I go down there to deliver the child for the first visit, and they set it up for me, tried to inflame a situation, tried to agitate anything they could to take the kids, but it didn't happen. So I left there, went immediately to a funeral home. 2 hours later, another vindictive call was made. Here comes a social worker. I spoke to her and told her that I'm just here to take care of a funeral arrangement. We have no communication. It was a false call. She takes the kids. I call her the next morning. She says, Danny, you told me yesterday that you left the kids with the maternal grandmother. You're not supposed to do that, and that's why I took them. I said, I didn't do it. I have it all recorded. She said, after a while, she said, okay, well, I'll see if I can talk to my boss, my supervisor. And then a week later, I call her. It was just a big cover-up after that. So a lot of those are recorded. I was thinking they were legal because of Penal Code 633.5, which says that you can record when you have reasonable consideration of kidnapping. So this was two times she did the exact same thing. There was no reason to hold them the first time. She made up a communication statement with me. And then the second time, I caught her on audio tape doing the same thing. So that's where we were. So it's like two counts of aggravated kidnapping. I had they say it isn't, but it is. Force and fraud is force and fraud. So I went through the grievance procedures. It was supposed to be in 10 days. They send me a denial of a grievance because I told the deputy director, I said, you have to return those kids if there's no immediate danger. And she said, I'm not going to return the kids. Next thing I know, I get a letter in the mail says there was imminent danger. And she wouldn't admit that on the phone, but they had to. I didn't have a right to a grievance hearing by imminent danger. They don't have to give you one. She says, I'm going to give you one. Sends me a denial notice. You're not getting one. You weren't entitled to one. Supposedly gives me one where we have an evidence exchange, and I give them the audio recordings and pictures that it was all just false, a bunch of baloney, a bunch of hype. It was a big cover-up. And they didn't allow the evidence into the hearing, saying it was illegal because it's a two-party consent. So they held on to it for 4 months. And I asked him, give it back to me. And he said, we think a crime may have been committed, so we're going to research it. So after 4 months, I said, you need to give those tapes back. And they ended up next day airing them back to me. So here I am. If it was illegal, I think I should be charged. And if they are legal, something needs to happen because, you know, you have tampering of evidence, suppression of evidence. It was kept out of the grievance hearing, my evidence. So grievance hearing, they had a bunch of other little things that they tried to make up for the removal, but it came down to what the hearing officer said. And he said that there was no, he said that there was, that I've engaged in some kind of irrational potential chance of a problem thing. And that was on his writings. So that, then you ended up, it was just a big shit. That's all I
can get.
A big shit.
Yeah, sure. Carlos, how about some comments on that?
Well, this kind of unconstitutional actions and corruption that was shown in Danny's case is kind of expected on my end, or at least I've seen it so much now, you know, ever since I kind of came out in regards to this.
Not surprising is what you're saying, huh?
Yeah, it's kind of just the way it is. Because the thing is that when it comes to child protective services, what people seem to not realize is that it deals in something called family court, which is incredibly unconstitutional. Mm. Essentially, you can have a child removed just by an ex parte hearing by a CPS investigator before you even get to court. You can have that kid removed for a good amount of time. Then the parent, I mean, then you finally end up getting a court case. And if that parent isn't there with a family court attorney, you know, the judge can just completely ignore it because it's not a jury of your own peers. It's a jury by a judge. And in many cases, the judge is friends with the CPS investigators, is friends with the court-appointed attorney if the parents choose to have one. And they're also friends with the with pretty much everyone else there because they're all getting paid by the same people, which is the government. Yeah. You know, it's all everybody there has an incentive to screw over the parents, and they do it time and time again.
Plus, there's also the federal money.
I mean,
it's
sad and it's tragic, and there's very little. I mean, there's some things you can do in order to try to prevent this kind of a situation from occurring, or situations with CPS in general. But once you actually get caught up in the legal system, the only real option you have is to get a private family court attorney, because I've seen judges laugh at people because they were dressed ghetto, you know, just kind of dismissing parents willy-nilly, not even paying attention, you know, when it's really a child's life in jeopardy in these cases. And they seem to be ignoring all the facts in regards to foster homes.
Sure. Yeah, that's just... Sorry, Steve.
What kind of money can the agency get per child? I mean, the other CPS whistleblower I had said that there can be anywhere between $4,000 to $8,000 a month that can go just to the agency alone.
I'd like to see those numbers actually in paper or in writing, because I'm not sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not going to like just allege something if I don't know.
Yeah.
If I could interject one thing about my case, the regional manager has been moved. The assistant regional manager has been moved. The supervisor, I never got a chance to talk to her. They wouldn't allow me to talk to her. They're all three gone. The social worker's still there. There's nobody else like me quite on the net that posts stuff as prolific as I do and concentrated. So I feel it could have very well had an effect, because you know, these tapes of their fraud and their manipulation and lies, I'm thinking can be used against them in union. If they try to fire somebody, it could potentially be brought in and jeopardize their credibility. But now all three of them are gone. I did face retaliation. They tried to take the other kids. We still have them here. We still have the three. They tried to take them. I've had six referrals since she kidnapped the kids. I never had anything. I had a clean record for 20 years. But we're making it here and holding on to the kids that we have. And just that the supervisor and them, they're gone now. We are going through changes with Tim Donnelly recently, California governor candidate, stated CPS kidnaps for cash. He was accepted unanimously by the Republican Party. He's an exciting person. He tells it like it is. It would be a real... a treat if we could get him into the governor's office, which, you know, who knows, maybe he seems like somebody who could do something.
That's okay. All right, thanks, Danny.
You had a little one there that come up to you?
Huh? No. You know, there's this talk in regards to possibly reforming child protective services, and I have just about as much hope in reforming it as I do reforming the DEA,
yeah,
which is honestly very little.
Very little.
Yeah. I don't like spending my time, like, you know, kind of smacking at the branches, you know, while ignoring the root of all evil, which is Child Protective Services Agency in general. So instead of, you know, some people can go and see if they can get some guy elected. You know, CPS was apparently, I believe the state was Arizona, where they were dismantling CPS.
Arizona, and
they
actually,
they kept all the same people. And they're just renaming it. It's
that's
total bullcrap.
That's what
they're not. They're not really doing anything. Yeah. It's a stunt move.
Yeah, exactly.
And what? Yeah, and if I hear a politician telling me anything, I know they're lying.
Right.
So I
that's what. I mean, Arizona governor, the guy that's going to be trying to get on the ballot.
Trying to extort me.
John Mueller, he's come out and said that.
You were saying, Stephen?
Yeah, the governor, I mean, he's running for governor in Arizona, John Mueller. He's actually come out and said that that's nothing but a farce, that they're just changing their name and moving it to a different building or something.
Yeah, they've done that in a number of states. I mean, Child Protective Services is essentially the same agency in many different states. A little bit different rules depending on the place. I think it was, I believe it's D.C. right now, where now the ex parte hearings are getting changed, so you actually do have to go to court in order to get a removal. Which is nice, you know. Thanks, guys. You'll go through a little bit of paperwork before you kidnap a kid. But I have very little hope in regards to this. Danny, is there any chance you can mute your mic? I can hear kind of the keyboard and stuff like that. But yeah, so I have very little hope as far as that's concerned. What I rather do is kind of help out individuals before CPS even gets involved. I can give some tips if you guys are kind of interested.
Yeah, that's what we're interested in. Look, we can do another show with you, Danny. We really need to get more of Carlos's ideas at the moment. And Carlos, give us some tips about, like, well, just my personal opinion is we need to become, on a grassroots level, we need to be more active. And this isn't, you know, this isn't from any of these links I've sent you or anything. That's another story about getting community rights. But we also need to just take community responsibility. And as you were saying before, we tend to have this sort of paternalistic, infantile sort of relationship with the government. And if people would just on a neighborhood level be more involved with abuse, without calling Child and Family Services, but actually going as a community to one another and sorting each other out, instead of always thinking, oh, I've got a problem, first thing I do is call the policeman or go to the courts. What do you reckon, Carlos?
Well, the community thing is a separate thing, and I'll go into that in a second. But so here's the thing about Child Protective Services. They gather evidence. What CPS can consider evidence is I talked to some guy, right, who is, say, the uncle of these kids. And he says a year ago, he heard that there was abuse occurring, right? And so based off of evidence, which is, you know, eyewitness reports from a year ago they might have heard about, that can be considered evidence in order to get a removal as far as children are concerned. So the first thing, you know, people need to realize is that CPS is using very asinine evidence gathering in order to remove children. So the first thing to do is to let other people in your community know who CPS is. And if they come to ask some questions, don't answer anything because they will use your words and manipulate those as best they can. Secondly, let your kid know. Now, I really recommend people not have their children in public school, but in certain cases, I suppose people have to kind of stick them around there. So it's important to know that CPS at any time can speak to a child in his community center, in his church, at his school, because according to the state of Texas and every other state in the United States, the state owns the child, the parent does not own the child. So they will go to a public school, they ask this kid a bunch of questions, coach them in order to manipulate them to get the answers that they want. So it's important for you to tell your kid, hey, these investigators that might come talk to you, but it's very important for you not to say anything. And I mean anything to these investigators, because they'll manipulate any of their words completely. Now, if you've done this, that means that they've not been able to really gather any evidence regarding your friends or anyone else because they're not answering to the CPS workers. So the investigators will then come to your home. They'll knock on your door, maybe, although North Carolina, Vermont, and a few other states I've been talking to recently, people aren't even doing that anymore. But if they're following the Fourth Amendment, they will knock on your door and they will, you'll open it up and they'll say, hi, I'm a CPS investigator. I have a few questions for you. May I come into your home? First thing to do, don't let them into your damn house. They will use a few dirty dishes as evidence that the conditions are unlivable for a child. Secondly, record the conversation, whether that is through audio or video, and let the investigator know you're doing such. It is completely legal in order to record a conversation, but in a few different states, New Hampshire being one of them, you have to let a government official know if you're going to do so. Third, you can at this point tell the investigator to go, you know, screw off and they can talk to your attorney. But in certain cases, that can be considered suspicious and they can use that as a means to get a warrant to come into your house. So instead, what you can do is you can actually choose to talk to the investigator. Now, if you're going to speak to the investigator in this particular case, it's important not to contradict anything you're stating. That's number one, because that'll be, according to him, a lie. Secondly, don't admit to any prior abuse that was done to you. So if you're abused as a kid, that can be used as evidence against you. If you admit that at some point in your life you were the victim of domestic violence, they can use it as evidence against you. There's cases where there was a woman, she admitted that her husband had hit her 3 years ago, and the husband's out of the house for 2 years, and they were still able to get a removal because it's considered dangerous for that child to remain in that particular situation. Third, admit to no prior drug use, even if you smoked weed. I don't care. Is this me telling people to lie? Yes, it is. Fourth, don't admit to any prior history of child protective services if it was in a different state. Because of the bureaucracies, it's hard for them to get information from state by state by state by state. Next, don't admit that any of the allegations are in any way true. So those are all the big don'ts. Now, if you've done all this and you're able to state like, okay, I don't drink alcohol, I don't hit my kids, they're not allowed outside at a particular time, things like that, then hopefully that'll be enough to deal with the case. But next, what's going to occur is a child protective service investigator has to be able to see your child before they can close the case, or else they'll rule it as unknown. And unknown to a CPS investigator is pretty much, if another case pops up, well, that's considered, they basically consider that ruled reason to believe for physical abuse. So instead, if your child has no bruises whatsoever, you can bring him to your front door and the investigator can see the child. Now, if your child does have some kind of bruising on him, say if he fell or something like that, well, the investigator can use a fallen bruise as, oh, well, that's proof of violence. So instead, after the investigator's gone, bring your child to a doctor who will take photos and show that the bruise was not a result of abuse, but instead it was because maybe the kid fell or something like that. So on all those notes, that should get you a little bit far, you know, kind of far. I've been helping people in North Carolina using these same tactics, and it's pretty much helped them. But it's also important, if your case ends up going to legal, as I've already brought up, don't go there by yourself. Don't think you can be some like great activist and be able to just bump through the system. And I recognize the fact that maybe some people have been able to do that, but it's incredibly rare. Mm. And, you know, a private family court attorney, yes, they might be expensive, but think about all the years you've spent trying to protect your child, all the money you've spent, all the money you spent on food and everything else. Well, like that, you can end up losing your kid in court. So just keep that in perspective whenever you're thinking about the cost of getting a private attorney. Now, fightcps.com, which is a wonderful website, has a lot of great resources. I can't remember the woman who's running it, but it's a pretty great website. It also has a list of attorneys that have that are in multiple states that are family court oriented. You don't want to get an attorney who's not family court oriented, because it's a whole different line of law as far as that's concerned. So that was a lot. Any questions?
That's a lot of really good advice. Yeah, keep going.
Yeah, Danny, I just wanted to also expand, actually, unless they have a warrant, unless anyone has a warrant signed by a judge and not a magistrate or somebody else that works in the courthouse or something like that, no one can actually push their way into your house. You have to open up the door and let them in. You don't even have to open up a door for anybody if you don't want to.
Yeah, and that can be a particular case. But again, you know, when it comes to cops and CPS, you know, here's the thing. So when I've talked to libertarians before, they always bring up like, oh, well, you know, the income tax is unconstitutional. Yeah, they don't care because they have guns. So
exactly.
Yeah. We're trying to get around this as much as we can. Like, we can go, oh, well, this is unconstitutional. George Washington didn't even care about the damn Constitution. It was called the whiskey tax. I mean, they've not really cared about the Constitution from the get-go. So hoping that some rules on a paper, that they're going to pay attention to that, when they're willing to kill 1.3 million people in Iraq for no reason whatsoever,
right,
is really, really hedging your bets here, buddy. So though they're not allowed to do particular things, it is important to stay calm in these particular situations. You know, I've talked to some people where it's like, oh, well, they can take my kids over with my dead body. It's like, yeah, they'll take your kids and then they'll have a dead dad.
Yeah.
So think it through, and realize the fact that these people are psychopaths and bastards, and that they have more guns than you. So it really is something to keep in mind. I don't mean that to dishearten anyone, though. Look, if we get out this information regarding Child Protective Services, that'll make less people want to call CPS, to be quite honest. And if you build a strong community of peaceful parents around you, for instance, again, I work with the Blue Ridge Liberty Project. All the information in that can be found at BlueRidgeLibertyProject.com. It's a group of people who are in a peaceful parenting, and if someone's having any kind of disputes, we discuss it as a community rather than trying to go to the law in order to do that. We also educate, I mean, if you check our group, then a lot of other groups that we've been running, we're educating, you know, tens of thousands of people on peaceful means of dispute resolution between them and their children and them and their spouses, rather than just doing the same old kind of tactic of, well, my kid ain't listening, so I'm going to hit him harder. So, you know, I think it's really important to educate individuals out there and build a strong sense of community. There's a number of different groups now, libertarian groups that are trying that. Of course, you have the Free State Project in New Hampshire, which they're doing their own kind of thing. You also have another group, I believe, in Wyoming and in Phoenix, Arizona. So it's important for us to not do this thing the libertarians can sometimes do where they say, like, well, as long as he's not bothering me, I won't bother him. Well, that's true to a point,
exactly,
which is absolutely true. I don't think the state should get involved, you know, and I don't believe in using violence. But that does not mean you should be ignoring if someone else in that household is suffering. And that's just jumping into the statist mindset if you think like, well, it's not my responsibility. No, it's not necessarily a positive obligation, but damn it, if you're not trying to at least promote peace in your own lifetime through real means rather than just going end the Fed, then you're really not doing anything.
Yeah. What do you do on your – you said you have a show. Carlos, do you have like a radio show or
is there a video? Oh, yeah. TruthOverComfort.net. It's a YouTube show and a podcast. We're going to be doing some live stuff soon enough, but right now it's mostly a few different interviews. I recently did a show which had a bit of a controversial title called Foster Homes, Where Good Children Go to Die. Which sounds very, you know, kind of shocking on that end. But once you start checking out the statistics, it seems to be really the case here. Let me see if I could pull up some of the stuff here.
Yeah.
Okay. So a short review of the evidence presented in the video regarding foster kids. Foster kids are 7-8 times more likely to be abused. Nearly half will end up homeless at the age of 18. They are 3 times more likely to be put on psychotropic drugs, 7 times more likely to develop an eating disorder, more likely to have post-traumatic stress disorder than veterans of war, and less likely to recover from that PTSD. They're more likely to become pregnant as a teenager, 20% more likely to be arrested, and 6 times more likely to die than if they stayed in a normal household. So when you start to come to grips with this fact, start to come to grips with the fact that over 1,000 children will die this year due to torture and negligence while under Child Protective Services care, you start to stop thinking, well, I'll just call CPS on them because, you know, without the state, who's going to kidnap kids and stick them in worse situations? You know, it's really ignoring all the information out there. And of course, you know, the state's done a really good job of making everybody ignore this. I mean, CPS is one of those things that's just not brought up that much in the libertarian community because it's really easy to bark about, you know, the war that's going on, which is true, and it should be impassioned. But we should be thinking about things that we can affect in our own life right now. And I think
Talk about what we can affect. You're talking about peaceful parenting. You're talking about conflict resolution. Keep talking.
Well, I mean, kind of the things that I brought up there. I've convinced a number of individuals to go about a different means as to raising their kids who were into kind of physically striking their children in order to do things. And I kind of just asked them the question, like, how's it working for you? Well, a lot of them tell me it's working fine. But then I would say, well, how often do you have to do it? Well, I have to do it more and more nowadays. It's like, well, then it's not working, is it? Because it's a short-term solution to a long-term issue. And you're making that issue going to last longer and longer and longer. And on all practical levels, if you check out the ACE study, if you look at a number of different studies in regards to this, it seems pretty conclusive that using physical violence against your child is obviously not a proper way of raising them if you want them to be part of a peaceful society. So there's a great book out there if anyone's interested in this, Parent Effectiveness Training. It's a really great book on peaceful parenting. I'm not going to go too much into that topic because you know what? It's different for everyone in regards to that. I'm just going to suggest if you maybe look at an option that doesn't involve having to use violence against your child.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things that we keep forgetting is how unconscious we are. And one of the best parenting courses I ever did was by a woman called Kate Birch, which basically had a whole lot of homework about how you were parented. Because we just play out, you know, automatically what we do. And so then it had other links in it. But I think it about knowing yourself and knowing the way you were parenting and then doing some sort of revolution is extremely important thing for parents to do. Even if you, you know, I was basically parented in a nonviolent household, but I had a father who belted me a few times, but it was pretty rare. But those few times still had an imprint in my mind. And you really have to go back to becoming conscious about the way you are parenting. And it's very hard for people to know, and communicating. It's very hard for people who just don't have those few sort of skills and actually the language. It's about people getting language as in how to communicate with things such as mirror, validate and reflect, negotiation, those sorts of words that just a lot of people just don't even have in their everyday parlance.
Yeah, you know what's funny is abusive parenting and the state, people use the same excuse in both cases. It's always the roads. So whenever people talk about the state, it's just always like, well, who's going to take care of the roads? And when it comes to not making your kid, for me, it's always, well, what if they run out into the middle of the road? And you're just like, exactly. It's why we need to get rid of the state and spanking. We just need to get rid of the roads. We're going to go. Which of course is completely ridiculous, but really it is that kind of thing that's kind of brought up to me, which is I just think about, like, you know, violence is one thing, and then you have thousands of other options out there outside of that, and I think kids aren't given enough credit when it comes to dispute. So something that's brought up to me, of course, is, oh, well, you're not a parent. Well, first off, I would have never come out against CPS if I was a parent, because I'd be worried about them coming after me.
Yep.
Secondly, I've had a kid hold up a gun to me. And I was able to talk him out of shooting me. So I've been able to deal with a bit of conflict with children. And third, you know, even though I don't have a goldfish, I know not to feed a Mountain Dew. So there's ways to be able to discover things without having to say, you know, actually have the kid. Of course, my experience is absolutely monumental when it comes to this discussion. But to act like I don't have experience with kids in insanely high conflict scenarios would also be ignoring the truth.
So, Danny, what are we going to do with CPS? I mean, we can talk about it, but we can't really dismantle it. I suppose we can encourage more whistleblowers, and we can encourage a thorough sort of external investigation of it. Obviously, the investigators need investigating. I know, you know, stateless societies a nice ideal, but that's not going to happen overnight. So what do we do this week? I mean, what can I do? What would you suggest people do this week and next week and the week after?
Are you wanting Danny to answer that, or?
I mean Carlos. I don't mean Danny at all.
Oh, okay. I thought you
said looking
Danny.
At the wrong name. I'm looking at your face.
Oh, okay. No. I was a little bit confused. Well, no. It's just a lot of the things I was bringing up. Look, you know, if you think reform works, go to a PTA meeting. You know, if I don't see reform happening anytime soon, it's going to be small steps, which is just going to make it more and more difficult for the state to be able to continue if more and more individuals are being educated in these matters. I mean, look at Obamacare right now. You know, people are seeing, Danny, is your keyboard going off? Could you mute real quick?
Excuse me.
Yeah, thank you. You know, the state is on its way out in so many different ways, and you're seeing people kind of come to terms with that fact when it comes to, you know, just take a look at what happened in regards to Syria, where I think this is like the first time in history, at least American history, when public sentiment finally actually mattered and we didn't end up, you know, turning a bunch of people in the red mush in our names. So I think people kind of speaking out regards to child protective services and becoming educated in this and becoming educated on peaceful means of parenting, that's all I got right now. I mean, if someone else has the golden key to freedom, I'm all up for it. But those are basically the solutions I kind of have right now.
Well, they're good solutions because you're keeping the conversation alive and you're blowing the whistle, and you know that's what we need to do more and more. And it's not happening on mainstream media. And you've got your shows where you keep interviewing people. and I'll put the link up there for the other guys to look at.
Yeah, again, that is I'm actually going to have to head out here. But the link for all my shows, you can find everything at truthovercomfort.net. And everything is up there, YouTube, podcasts, articles I've written on the subject. I have a lot of stuff in regards to dealing with child protective services. My email is there, which I'm sure I'll get plenty of emails. One thing, though, that I have to say before you email me, I do not have the key to freedom. I've had people message me, and it's very, very tragic, of cases where they had their children's, you know, their rights terminated 2 years ago. And I'm going to be honest with you. I can't, in most of these cases, I'm not going to be able to help in those particular cases. I can get you through there. I can try to find you some networking for other individuals. But just keep that in mind. You know, I don't want to, the last thing I ever want to do is give out false hope. I do have hope in individuals, but I don't have hope in evil bureaucracies, which is what CPS kind of is. So thank you, Stephen and Jillian, for having me on here.
Yeah, that's quite okay. Yeah, it's too bad you had to run off and do another show here in a little bit. But
it's just a matter of scheduling, but I would love to be on another time if you guys would have me. So.
Oh, sure, sure. We can always, there's always a lot more corruption out there to expose. So
indeed there is.
I'll have to get with you for another time.
Well, you all have a great day.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, you too. You're great. Thanks heaps, Carlos. I really thoroughly enjoyed it. Really easy to interview. Thanks so much.